The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of drive time.
Money FM 89.3, it is drive time with Elliot Danker, Timothy Goh, and Chua Tien Tien, and it is now time for Market View, where we will be putting the banking sector in Singapore in focus. But first, let's get a recap of how Friday went.
Right, Elliot. So Singapore shares opened higher today, tracking solid gains in global markets following several major developments in the global banking sector. Now, back home data from Enterprise Singapore also showed key exports contracted for the fifth straight month in February, but at a slower pace than the month before because a decline in non-electronic shipments eased. Now, the Straits Times Index was up 0.5% in early trade to 3,170 points after nearly 149 million securities changed hands then. Now let's take a look at the closing numbers. The benchmark STI closed up 0.88% at 3,183 points. In terms of value turnover, that's 1.89 billion Sing dollars. The gainers outnumbered losers 307 versus 233. Top advances, UOB, New Incorporation USD, Venture Corp, and top decliners, GMH USD, Haw Par, and Jardine Cycle and Carriage. Now, the banking sector in Singapore, as you mentioned earlier, Elliot, continues to be in focus today. The Monetary Authority of Singapore said yesterday that the trio of local banks' exposure to Credit Suisse are insignificant. The banks are well capitalized and conduct regular stress tests against credit and other risks. So much to watch on a Friday. And joining us as we break down all that market movements, Benjamin Goh, Head of Research and Investor Education at CR as well. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi, Tien.
Great to have you. And Ben, let's start with the usuals. How did the STI close for the week?
Well, the STI is up about 0.18% for the week, so not as great as how it performed today on a standalone basis. I think certainly the unfolding events in the U.S. banking sector is a bit of a downer, and there is a little bit of a flight to safety aspect here, because as you had mentioned, the vast majority of the SDI components stocks were up. The only ones that were down were the Jardine CNC, Jardine Medicine Holdings, Hong Kong Land, and Peridot, as well as Mapletree Industrial Trust. So you've got the vast majority of the big companies in Singapore doing fairly well today. With respect to the latest non-oil domestic exports number of a minus 15.6% year-on-year, that's actually an improvement over last month's minus 25%, and it is tracking, or it tracked almost exactly the same as the consensus analyst estimates. So that being the case, I think this was not really an impact on today's performance, since there were hardly any surprises in terms of upside or downside risk for the non-oil domestic exports. So probably not any kind of impact on today's stock market performance.
All right, Ben, we've got some companies to watch as well, but looking more specifically on the biggest movers, what are your thoughts on what we saw today?
Well, certainly this week has been a roller coaster ride. For those of us in Singapore, there is a bit of a crisis unfolding in the U.S., reminiscent of Lehman Brothers, so on and so forth. There is a certain, as I mentioned just now, a movement towards safe havens. That's why you can see the vast majority of the STI component stocks going up. So it's quite interesting to see that even the Singapore banking sectors, our banking stocks were also up. We had a corporate event with UOB Group earlier this week. There were a ton of questions regarding Silvergate, SVB, so on and so forth. Again, I think we're going to get the next question. But again, the Singapore banks are strong. I mean, you know, balance sheets, so on and so forth. And they have performed pretty well today, considering the turmoil overseas.
Right, and zooming in on the banking sector, as you mentioned, Ben, the MAS has said that the trio of local banks' exposure to Credit Suisse are insignificant. The banks are well capitalized. They conduct regular stress tests against credit and other risks. Any thoughts on this? And if Singapore banks are well capitalized and well placed, could we see an inflow in deposits from those shifting their money away from the US and Europe?
Okay, I think this is one of those times when, you know, you're thankful that you're Singaporean, because this kiasu kiasi mentality definitely feeds into the, you know, into the reason why Singapore banks are so well capitalized. They definitely have got robust risk management policies, procedures. They tend to be rather conservative, and that's why they usually have got sufficient buffers, or in accounting terms, we call it accruals, accruals for non-performing loans. So as you can see, they already have a buffer for any kind or even the worst case kind of contingency, and there is no direct exposure of the Singapore banks to anything that's happening in the U.S. So we also need to kind of remember that what's been happening in the U.S. is really, as SVB Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, and all that, they're rather small banks. They do not represent systematic risk. Their depositors were basically startups or hedge funds or venture capitalist firms, so on and so forth. Nothing to do with the auntie and uncles. So there's, you know, there shouldn't be any kind of impact on the Singapore banking sector. There may be significant inflows coming in from, you know, people moving out of U.S. banks as well as Euro, but we'll have to see, simply because the Singapore banks are rather strong regionally in Asia in terms of branding, in terms of exposure, footprint and services, but they are not exactly at the same level as Citigroup or Wells Fargo in the U.S. So it might be a bit of a reach for clients in the U.S. Who may not, you know anything about DBS or UOB to move their money here. But at some level, there could be inflows.
Ben, I want to take a look at Thai Bev. The company clarified in a late-night Boris filing yesterday, I believe, that it's got no concrete plans to list or sell its spirits business. Apparently, this is on the back of Bloomberg reporting that it is exploring options that include an initial public offering in Singapore. All right, let's talk about the basis for that report, you know, for the plans to list or sell the spirit business. How are you reading into Thai Bev's response here?
Well, it sounds like the company is exploring various options to raise funds for, you know, either for the expansion or to fortify its balance sheet. And it sounds like it has not settled on any one proposal yet. So we note that in its 2022 financial year reporting, Thai Beverage actually reported a 22.2% rise in net income. But the company itself has also cited prolonged challenging market conditions as a rationale for the fundraising. So looking at the numbers itself, I don't think there are any glaring issues on the operating side of things. I think it's just part and parcel of where we are in the economic cycle. So this could be a timing issue, because obviously the company does not want to sell itself short by accepting a lowball number. So it's a question of valuation. Right. So I guess when the company, or rather the economy, improves, they might get better bids for the parts of the organization that they want to sell.
Right. If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Benjamin Goh, Head of Research and Investor Education at SIAS. Well, Ben, since you are here today and you're from SIAS, I want to take this chance to ask about Baustate Singapore, because Baustate Singapore's bid to acquire Baustate Projects at 95 Singapore cents a share is met with opposition, and in particular from the Securities Investors Association Singapore, or SIAS. So coming from SIAS' perspective, any comments here?
Sure. SIAS, we actually issued a press statement on the 13th of March earlier this week. I think the crux of the matter is that the independent financial advisor has opined that both sets' offer is not fair but reasonable. Now, at SIAS, we know that under SGX listing rules, all exit offers for voluntary delisting must be both fair and reasonable. So you can't have not fair but reasonable. So that's where the crux of the issue is. So we hope that the management considers revising its offer price. But in the meanwhile, we think that shareholders should seriously consider not accepting the offer. There is some concern out there that because if shareholders do not accept the offer, then the company may not have sufficient liquidity, and they may not be able to exit their position. That should not be the case, because SGX, or rather SIAS, we have also asked SGX RegCo to require the company to restore the free float so that existing investors can also exit their positions if they want. If they do not want to accept the delisting, they can exit in the open market.
Right, and let's take a look at some of the headlines around the world, Ben. J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, and Fed Chair Jerome Powell, they've gathered major U.S. banks to inject this $30 billion U.S. dollars in deposits into First Republic Bank. So the question is, why is it in the interest to do so? And I believe shares are on track to end the week higher in the U.S. So why is it in the interest to do so? And is this a case? Are these banks that have received deposits as a result of the recent withdrawals from these regional lenders, smaller lenders, and are they now just putting it back into First Republic?
Okay, so I think in a nutshell, the global economy is in a rather delicate position. So before this week, before Silvergate, before SVB, the narrative was that the Fed and other central banks globally, you know, they're trying their best to tread the eye of the needle. So they are fighting inflation while not tanking economic growth. Now, this is made so much harder this week simply because of the fact that there are now, you know, concerns about the safety of deposits in banks in the U.S. So this could be a budding banking crisis, right? Now, again, just to be clear, there is no systematic risk. There's no suggestion that SVB or First Republic or Signature Bank, no suggestion at all that they pose systematic global risk. None. Zilch. Right? These banks are not Lehman Brothers. They're not even a player in the derivatives market. But that's it. Perception matters a lot. So that's why the Fed, the U.S. Treasury, and the leading banks have all stepped in. So they have guaranteed deposits far and above the FIDC requirements. That means even though you have got millions of dollars, 100% of your deposits in these banks are guaranteed. This is, and also for First Republic, they have come together and injected $30 billion U.S. dollars. Now, this is to ensure that there's sufficient liquidity. So even if depositors want to take their money out, they can. There is no chance that you go to an ATM and you don't get your money back. Right. So all these actions are meant to assure that the banking system is robust, there is no counterparty risk, and all deposits are safe. Now, you had a different question about the inflows. Well, I think, again, there's something to be said about flight to safety. So, yes, J.P. Morgan and the other big banks have seen some inflows because people have moved money out of regional banks into the big banks. But there is obviously an element of self-interest for the big banks. So, the previous narrative is that the Biden administration were looking into beefing up regulations of the banking sector, including the big banks. So the big banks were already coming under fire for soaking up a lot of the deposits from the smaller banks. So coming together, this is an opportunity for them to backstop the banking system as a whole to prevent a wider contagion effect and to show that they are part of the solution. Right. So the regulators have guaranteed all deposits in Silicon Valley Bank, and I would expect them to do the same for any other bank that is perceived to be at risk.
Right. And, well, very quick one, Ben, before I let you go, staying on the topic of SVB as well and the ongoing banking crisis in the U.S., India's deputy IT minister, he said Indian startups had deposits worth about $1 billion U.S. dollars with SVB. And we know that India has a lot of tech firms. How vulnerable is the country to this crisis?
Well, the number itself, US $1 billion, is actually a paltry amount to India as a whole. And again, the depositors for the SVB are basically Indian startups. So they are not retirees, they're not pensioners, they're not auntie uncles, right? So that said, the issue is really about confidence and trust in the banking system. So if you have a bunch of Indian startups going belly up because of this, then there could be a domino effect on Indian vendors, suppliers of those startups, related parties, so on and so forth. So the perception is that you don't want a chink in the armor. You don't want companies going down because then the perception is that very close to the cliff, we don't want that to happen. All right. So it's about the perception and the contingent risk. The dollar amount itself is not really an issue.
Right. So the keyword for the day, perception, perception, perception. Thanks very much, Ben. That was Benjamin Goh, Head of Research and Investor Education at SIAS. Have a great weekend ahead.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.